Blog Talk Radio.
It is anything.
It is everything.
It is the Buck Gritano Podcast.
Ancient alien theory.
Ancient civilization.
Spirituality.
Mythology.
Reality TV.
Reality TV star.
Current events.
Not so current events.
Comedy.
Religion.
Music.
Authors.
Sports.
If it's hot and if it's happening, it's right here, right now, on the Buck Gritano Podcast. And now, here's the man who makes Stream of Mind a streaming sensation, Buck Gritano.
Are you ready? Buck Gritano Podcast, Thursday nights, 8 p.m. At the moment, Blog Talk Radio will be the destination to find us, but I'm uploading stuff onto YouTube. Trying to find guests, and it's funny because started off, let's cut off this intro right here, this little corn intro. Blind back in the days, I used to listen to Korn, but for people out there don't know me, Buck Gritano, Queens, New York, Rockaway Beach, getting a chance to interview people who I seem to be, you know, to be interesting. First guest I had on, Fitz Zimmerman, he had the Chronicles of the Giants, and people saying, yeah, Giants. Well, if you don't know Buck, how many years? Almost seven years horse racing. Covered it for Pass the Buck Talking Horses. You name them, we interviewed them. Travis Hemd, my man Jay. Each week, Thursday night, we had the best, you know, the best in horse racing. So now we're going to switch things up, and I'm bringing things on that I'm interested in. Started watching, yeah, right, here goes the laughs. Ancient Aliens, okay, I hear everybody laughing now. Started watching with Ancient Aliens, right? So think about it. Horse racing 7 years. Ancient Aliens, watching it. And I know this stuff is not 100%. It's TV. It's all about, you know, getting the ratings. So hold on 1 second. Let's throw them on. Our special guest tonight is, this is really cool because for a guy like me, I'm just starting off with an intro. Welcome. I got Gary Wayne. What's up, Gary? How you doing, man? I'm just getting a little intro to people who haven't heard Buck Gritano before.
Oh, hey, very happy to be here. Can you hear me? I was having trouble connecting in, so.
This is Blog Talk Radio. As I was talking about, I did this for 7 years almost, horse racing, covered horse racing, and I know a lot of people out there. It's not a big popular sport in America.
Hello?
As it was. Yes, I hear you fine. Perfect.
Okay.
Do I hear you? You hear me fine?
I hear you, yes. Yep.
Okay, you hear me fine. Like I was trying to tell everybody, I don't know if they even heard me. This is the Blog Talk Radio. So welcome, Gary Wayne. You got a book out for the last couple of years now. It's unbelievable. I can't even begin to tell you how happy I am to have you on the show. First of all, I'm telling everybody how I started off. Let me give you a little intro on myself. You go to YouTube, you see Gary Wayne everywhere. Everywhere. You must do this like at least five times a week. So I wanted to do something different because what can I ask you that it's not on YouTube already? You know what I mean? Welcome anyway to the Buck Gritano Podcast. Gary Wayne, Genesis 6 Conspiracy is your book. And I wanted to just to hear you talk. You know what I mean? That's pretty much with this podcast today. But welcome. How you doing, man?
I am doing very well and so happy to be here. And I'm sure there's lots of questions you can ask that probably haven't been asked, but, you know, these things always tend to go in their own sort of direction, so I'm kind of excited to talk about the book, so.
No, it's amazing, man. Now, the book's been out since, I think, what was it, 2014, you released the book? Before I get into the book, how does a guy get into writing a book about Genesis and conspiracies? Now, if you're not into, you're into the Bible, okay, you can read the Bible how you take it, but when you throw a conspiracy into the Bible, what came about as a kid? What were you like? What was Gary Wayne like as a kid growing up? Play sports? Did you play sports and stuff like that? I mean, what a start. Teenage years.
Yeah, I played a lot of sports when I was young. I was, you know, good at a lot of sports, but not good enough at any one sport to make it a living. So I, like everybody else, had to go into the workforce. So So played a lot of sports. Have obviously, you know, if people are familiar with any of my YouTubes or my book, I have a lot of interests. So this whole writing thing, it's something that I've been wanting to do for a long time, and I wanted to connect in different sort of passions that I had in my life. I've always been a history buff. I mean, I started reading history when I was like 6, 7, 8 years old, right? As soon as I started reading, and I'm a mythology buff. And so when I got into biblical prophecy, I wanted to kind of connect all of that together. And that's kind of where, you know, this whole conspiracy thing sort of comes from. And when I first started to write this book, though, I wasn't intending on writing a conspiracy book. I just wanted to connect Genesis 6 with end time prophecy. But the more I dug into the research, the more I found I was opening up doors. And then by the time I got into the secret society aspect and was starting to learn about what their beliefs were are on history and prehistory and the end time, it just completely changed the direction of the book and into a conspiracy book. So what I intended to do and what I ended up doing was, you know, two different things. Hello?
Yes, I think we lost you for a second, but you were talking about two different things.
Yes. Yeah, so what I began to write at and how it ended up was this is basically two different things. So it turned into a lot larger book than I had intended, but and into like a conspiracy that's like the greatest sort of conspiracy from my perspective.
The thing, and watching so many videos of you, Gary, right, and with the new book out, mm-hmm. and it's been out for a while now, I just watched everybody. So much information was thrown at me. But the one thing that stood out, that 30 years it took you to start the book. I don't mean 25 years you said in one interview, and then you stopped, and
yep.
then you had another 10 years on. So this is something that you, I mean, pretty much your whole life been doing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I really started, you know, researching back in the basically 1980, 1981, and then I started seriously maybe writing the book in the late 90s, and then we got it published in 2014. So, yeah, it's been a long period. And, you know, even the writing period was a long period of time because every time I thought I was done, I wasn't. And there was just more material that was coming at me that I wasn't expecting that I just felt I had to continue to write about. So, yeah, very, very long period of time. And what I wanted to do in the book as well is I wanted to bring some credibility to the genre, and so I wanted to not do a lot of speculating, and I also wanted to show where I got my research from so that people could check the veracity of the argument and what I was talking about, and let the other perspective sort of speak for itself as the story is unfolding. So there's like 120 pages of endnotes in the book.
That's truly amazing. Now, for a guy like me, like I've been covering horse racing for 7 years. I went to school, Catholic school now, I'm Christian, from grades 1 to 6. Pretty much my mom was a single mom, raising me and my brother. Now, I never got into the Bible. So now as I get along and I'm trying to dip myself into these different, topics or even the beginning of Genesis, just with the fallen angels and all this stuff is like, wow, I didn't even know this was there. Because when I went to school from 1st to 6th grade, this was never even shown to me. I don't even think they talked about it in Catholic school. So now I'm researching and going on the internet, and a lot of the stuff out there is absolutely crazy. That's why I fell in love with you, because the research you have done over the years is outstanding. And I hear you talking on each interview. Now, for somebody who's just starting off, I kind of like me, who's green. We call it in horse racing green. When you're, you know, first around the horse race, around the track, and you don't know, you know, a horse is behind from, you know, whatever. But where does a guy start off with the Genesis? Explain to me what exactly happened in Genesis and what you started in the book, what your book is about, starting off with Genesis. Explain it to me. It's like I understand what goes on, but I'm it's like you have to take it down a level for me. You know what I mean?
Sure. Well, you know, when I first read the interesting part, there's a lot of interesting parts in Genesis, and especially in prehistory, that, you know, most people just sort of glance over and they say, well, that's kind of odd, and they just kind of move on. Well, in Genesis 6, I mean, you get the most strangest, oddest sort of piece of the whole Bible, I think, in a very supernatural way. So in Genesis 6, you have the sons of God going to the daughters of human females, and they create giants from the offspring that were the mighty ones of old in some translations of the Bible, and the men of renown, or the heroes of old, just as it in other translations, just as they're described in Sumerian mythology with the Anunnaki and Greek mythology with the Titans. And all of a sudden you go, well, wait, what's going on here? And all of a sudden you end up in the flood story, and there it's part of the flood story, but there's no explanation there. And what we're told is that they're both before and afterwards. And then all of a sudden we have giants or Nephilim showing up after the flood. And again, you're kind of asking, you know, what's going on here? And so you have people like the Raphaim and the Abim and the Anakim and the Emin and the Zamzuzim and on and on and on of people that do not go back to the Table of Nations. And for people who may not be familiar in the Bible with the Table of Nations are, that's in First Chronicles and in Genesis, where it lists the descendants coming out of Noah and his sons and the nations that were created afterwards. They're nowhere to be found. So we've got this story of giants that are showing up, and they're not explained. And it's just like this mystery. And then all of a sudden they're showing up in the Exodus at the time of Moses and Joshua conquering the promised land. And you're going, whoa, what's that all about? So that's kind of how I got sort of hooked into this. And then understanding that there's connections in the New Testament where it has like Jesus talking about his second coming and the sign of the end times is going to be like the days of Noah. And yet there's these giants going on in the times of Noah, both before and after the flood, because Noah lived 350 years after the flood as well. And you've got fallen angels and you've got demons going on in the New Testament. And so this is the story that I wanted to dig deeper into, is what was the effect of these giants that were created? Why were they created? And do they have any impact on the ancient world that was significant? And did they have any impact after the flood and into our time? And that's what I dig into in the Genesis 6 conspiracy.
And that's totally cool, because when I look at it, as somebody who doesn't really know the Bible side of it, starting from now, seeing people find, giant skeletons, having guests on that talked about giants that roamed not too long ago. So to take it back that far, it's kind of believable to me. I mean, honestly, it's definitely believable to me. So I'm intrigued by it. Now, are the Nephilim, are they the giants? Is that the same thing? A giant is a Nephilim? Is that correct?
That's correct. And like in the King James Version, you don't see the word Nephilim. And that's because it has the word giant. And Nephilim will actually come up twice in an actual word if you use the actual translation out of Hebrew. So in Genesis 6:4, it'll say giants. But if you take that back to the Hebrew word, it'll say Nephilim. And again, in Numbers, when it's talking about the descendants of Anak, descending from giants, if you take that back, that says Nephilim. And in other translations that say like NASB or NIV or many of the modern translations, it just says Nephilim.
Okay, so it's exactly the same thing as a giant. Now I understand how God cast out the fallen angels, and I heard a discussion on one of your interviews about how, you know, how God created the fallen angels before they were fallen angels, and I know Lucifer was involved, and I know there's different names for Lucifer. I'm learning this as I go along, so I'm taking it all in. But the thing that I don't understand is how would a fallen angel, like, you betray God, and I heard you talk about it, and I was like, it's amazing when you know the sacrifices of betraying the Almighty. I mean, the Almighty, and be placed on Earth, and then I'm taking it as, Gary, they had a master plan, and I don't know if I'm correct. The fallen angels had a master plan that's still maybe around to today's time, if that's true. That's how much I get of the fallen angels, and I based a lot of Genesis is based on that, right? I know in the beginning the creation story of God, and everything was good. And like you say, you said it seven times. Mm-hmm. Everything's good.
Yeah.
But what went wrong in your studies? What went wrong?
Well, in my studies, obviously you have Satan as one of the key components here, but there's also a third of the angels that rebelled with Satan. And so these are beings that are created immortal and have no choice in their creation, and they're put into this world, whether it's this dimension or another dimension or both, under God's rules. And at some point in time, and Satan is the one of the greatest beings ever created by God, and he's around the throne of God. In fact, he's described in Ezekiel as having, you know, a breastplate of 9 jewels, which is, means he may have been a high priest around the throne of God. But at some point in time, these angels who didn't have a choice do make a choice, and they decide that they want to live separate and away from God. And so they rebel. Now, they know, because they were created by God, they know how powerful he is. So when people think that or suggest that they rebelled and they thought that they could defeat God, I don't believe they thought that. I mean, they're created by the omnipotent. They would know they can't create, defeat the omnipotent. But I do believe that they thought that they could justify their rebellion and be rewarded with the grace of God to live in a separate realm or dimension or part of the universe, however you want to look at that. And when you look at some of the legends and mythologies and entertainment that keeps coming down, especially in science fiction, if you take, you know, Star Wars as one classic example, you have the rebellion that's trying to fight to live in their own sort of space. And that's the same thing that fairy mythology comes down with these rebels that come from other planets, is that they wanted to live in their own realm away from God and rule themselves. So I think what they were hoping for in the beginning was to win that.
Now,
and then when that wasn't happening,
I take it as, and I hate to cut you off, because I take it as this could have happened before, maybe several times before, to the point where it was enough. Could that be something? I mean, we don't know how far creation goes back in the universe. Could have happened a couple of times, and Lucifer or Satan, whatever you want to call him, he's like, ah, this is the 8th, 7th time this happened in this universe, whatever. I'm done with this, man. But I don't know. I take that as an angle, and the Star Wars was perfect. Because I love the Star Wars angle of it. They don't want nothing. They don't want their own space. They just want their own, you know, little space. Yeah, like an avatar. Just leave us alone. Let's have a little forest or something like that. But that's why I look at it, Gary. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe there's, you know, this has been done a few times. I mean, we're not told that in any of the mythologies or anything like that. But what we do know is that once humans are created, and particularly Adam and the descendants that are going to come from Adam, he's created to make a choice, and he has to choose God as a human. And if things work out in Adam and the Adamites fulfill our commission, that they're going to be raised above angels in the future time. So this now brings humans and the rebellious angels into conflict. And so what they're trying to do is prevent humans from being raised above angels in the future time. So you've got the angels who are loyal to God, you've got the fallen angels, you've got the offspring of the fallen angels, and you've got the humans that are all sort of going on in this. Now, to come quickly back to what you're talking about, could have happened way into prehistory? Absolutely. If you go with standard doctrine in the Bible, people will tell you the world is 6,000 years old. Well, two things on that. The first thing would be, you can't reconcile Genesis 1 with Genesis 2. So you can't reconcile the creation of male and female in multiples at the same time and spread around the world and be fruitful and to multiply with the account of Adam, who's created in singular and then put in the Garden of Eden sometime later, and then Eve is created at some point in time later, and the stories do not match up. So the Bible is either in conflict, which I do not believe, because I don't believe the Bible is in conflict. It's just a matter of understanding what the story is saying, or it's two separate creations of humans. So you have a possible gap between day 6 and day 7 or sometime afterwards. And then also, what most people don't want to talk about is Genesis 1:1 to 1:2 is you have a possible significant gap of who knows how long, where if you can translate that out of Hebrew two ways, that either the earth is created with the heavens and the universe on day one and part of the 6 or 7 days of creation, or the earth became void at some point in time between 1-1 and 1-2, and it was renewed in the 6 days of creation. If that's the case, then you have a scenario where you have maybe billions and billions and maybe even more. We don't know how long. And wow. It also makes sense if you position the angelic rebellion before day one, that they were the preferred immortal being of God in the universe that were doing business probably on multiple planets. And for some reason, you have a rebellion, and as a direct result of the rebellion, the earth is destroyed. And then at some point in time down the road, God comes along and renews the face of the earth.
And then the evil had to be handled by God, and he had to, strike back, I guess, in the Great Flood. Now, I take it as the Great Flood, many different cultures it happened in. According to the Bible, everything was supposed to be, set for a restart, like restarting your computer, right? We're pretty much going to start, but some of the Nephilim were left, survived, I guess, right? Because I know the story of Gilgamesh. Which flood story is the one I could believe in, or the one that your research has taken us to? Which flood?
Well, I think all of the flood stories that you have around the world, they're all telling the same story.
Okay.
And I believe they're coming at it from a different perspective. And so you have the Noah account, which is a survival of humans. And most of the other ones around the world, although there are other flood stories and survival stories of humans, these are not survival stories of humans. So if you mention the Epic of Gilgamesh as an example. And so Gilgamesh is two-thirds God and one-third human. And he's created in the typical way you create Nephilim, between the gods and the offspring of a human female. Sometimes they're immortalized to being goddesses. And then you have Enki, who is just created to offset Gilgamesh's wickedness. And he's created from the gods as well. And he is two-thirds god, one-third human. And so that's why the mother has to be human, because they're one-third human, right?
Absolutely.
And so they're telling the story about the flood story about Utnapishtim or Zayazudra, depending on which translation you're going to take out of prehistory, out of Sumeria or Akkadia or Babylon. And he is two-thirds God and one-third human. He's the archetypical Anunnaki or Nephilim. And he takes along his whole family. And so they're there to repopulate the earth with the archetypical Nephilim after the flood. And so within the Epic of Gilgamesh, you have two possibilities of how the giants survived the flood. One is a second incursion with the creation of Gilgamesh and Enkidu. And the other one is the survival of the giants on the ark with Utnapishtim and his family. Just as you go into Greek mythology, you have Deucalion and Pyrrha, and they say Deucalion is the Greek Noah, except that Deucalion is the son of Prometheus, and Prometheus is both a Titan and a Titan god. There's probably Prometheuses. Either way, he's still a Nephilim. So this is another Nephilim survival story. So that's why, I look at, when I did the research, I was found very quickly that they're all telling the same story, and the easiest way to describe telling the same story on the creation of the Nephilim is go to the Atlantean mythology that's recorded in Critias and Timaeus by Plato. And he describes the story of Poseidon, who's the god of the sea. He takes a human female named Clymene, and he produces five sets of twins, or 10 demigod giants, that are going to rule the Atlantean empire. The story is told over and over and over and over in all cultures all around the planet.
The same,
and what's interesting
the same
about
way, the same exact way,
the
Gary.
Same
too.
That's way.
The same exact
yeah.
way. Wow. And you see it today in today's
yeah.
culture. My son watched a movie the other. I don't know what his name was. Jackson Piercy Jackson, I believe. It was a movie, and he's
yep.
the son of one of the gods. So I know. See what you're saying, man. It ties up. Oh man. Wow.
Well, and look at it also this way: is we look at the word hero that I was talking about before, and that's what they're called in Greek mythology as well. Heroes or titans. With Hesiod and Theogony or Homer. And in the ancient epoch, Hero was looked at in a different sort of manner as we understand it today, although you get a reflection of it that I'll come back to here in a second. Hero was understood in the ancient world as the offspring of the gods and a human female, a demigod, right? So that word is appropriately defined. Now let's take superheroes of today, and let's take Superman in particular, because it's the easiest one to make the connection with. These are reflections of these ancient demigods, right? Superhumans. And so, you know, Superman's a superhero, fine. That's one easy connection, and you have the word hero. But if you look at his emblem on his chest, you've got this upside-down pyramid or triangle, which is always part of the Nephilim story, is pyramids and the flood. They're all connected in all mythologies around the world, one of those constants. And then you have this S, that's a red S, that's shaped like a serpent, just as Satan is the red serpent, and just as seraphim angels had a face of a serpent. And he comes from the house of El and is the son of El. And El is the word coming out of Hebrew and other ancient languages like Akkadian, as in eel or elu or al or Allah, as an angel or a god. So here you have a son of El with the Superman with the red S of Satan on his chest, just as demigods were created in the ancient epoch.
Took it right
it's
out
an
of
amazing
right
allegory.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. Now when I look at Superman, I won't look at it the same. But where did it go? Where did their plan arrive? I mean, they had to have a plan, right? Because obviously they survived through all these different cultures, years. Are they still? I hate to say, are they still around now? Because I'm really skipping too forward. I don't want to do that yet. But what was their plan after that? After the Great Flood, what was their plan to spread out to be what?
Well, it's the same plan that is before the flood. So what happens with the and I'll get to that. What happens before the flood is that these giants, they usurp the kingships around the world, right? And then they partner with the descendants of Cain, fallen angels, and what the descendants of Cain are doing, they're developing the seven sacred sciences and the technologies that come along with it that they take to an extraordinary level, probably beyond what we have today if we're not in the end time and we're already at this level of technology and the end time is going to be like the days of Noah. They had very advanced technology and the secret societies. The Masons take their organization right back to this period of time. So this is a partnership that is going on in prehistory that's going to corrupt the whole world, and not just in violence as what most people understand caused the flood. They are going to corrupt all the animals on the earth, either through copulation of fallen angels, DNA manipulation. They are going to corrupt the genomes of the plants, and so the whole world is going to be corrupted. And they're trying to enslave humankind and have them rebel or obliterate them so that they can't be raised above angels in the future time. But God comes along, does the flood, and there's a restart. But as we mentioned earlier, Nephilim survived the flood somehow, some way. We're not told in the Bible how that happens. I personally like Second Incursion as my favorite, and on other arcs is another good possibility with all the different testimonies around the world from a polytheist perspective. So they've been trying since, you know, the first 100 years after the flood to usurp the kingships again, which they did after Babel, and to enslave humankind again, and to bring on the end time, to bring on this rendezvous with destiny, to fight and have that rebellion as rebels to get their own realm away from God, and to try and have humankind completely rebel with them so that they don't earn their inheritance.
And they're doing a great job right now as we speak, man. I'm watching TV, and I've got to spit it out. I'm watching TV with my son. He's 19. He's going to be, what, 18 in a couple of months? And Gary, which we'll have Gary Wayne on the Buck Rotano podcast, The Genesis 6 Conspiracies. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm stoked. I love it. But to watch North Korean armies and all this stuff on TV with different countries, and my son turns to me and goes, "Dad, do you think we need a gun?" And I said to him, "Do we need a gun?" I said, "I don't. What are you talking about?" He said, "Stuff doesn't look right, man. It doesn't feel right." And I'm saying to myself, wow. Yeah. And then I'm having Gary on talking about these people, and it totally makes sense where their agenda. They got it. They got it where my son thinks the Illuminati is something cool. You know what I'm saying? When Jay-Z's throwing up triangles, my son thinks that's, you know, cool, like Illuminati and this.
Yeah.
So they're definitely doing their job. So now it's more scarier than I take it in, to be honest with you.
Well, it is. And you know, the legend that they have with the president of North Korea, you know, his great-grandfather is supposedly born on a mountain and born of a god. And this is the same story as, you know, with the Nephilim. So he's trying to connect himself back on that. But the world is in, you know, a state of flux right now. And there's a lot of things that have to happen before we're going to have the end time. So we're not there yet. If things happen in a hurry, we can get there. But one of the things that people need to do to understand the times that we're heading into is you need to understand prehistory, because as the Bible tells us, there's nothing new under the sun. And this has been an ongoing conspiracy, as I mentioned all along, to get control of the world. And the spirit of the Antichrist is always in motion, and it's been around, you know, since the beginning. So this is something that is ongoing. So if we understand what happened in prehistory, we can better understand what's going on out there. So when we look at what happened in prehistory, and using the simplest example, because there's, you know, according to other mythologies and religions, there's anywhere from 4 to 9 major civilizations before the flood. It doesn't really matter the number. I like the number of 7. But the Atlantean Empire was, as I said, consisted of 10 empires that were working together to try and conquer the whole world. Now, in Plato says that they were defeated by the Athenians, the prehistoric Greeks, and the Titan rebels were put into a place called Tartarus, which also translates out as abyss, in a prison. And so where I'm going with this is that they're trying to recreate the secret societies, the descendants of the Nephilim from the dynasties that they created, the mystical religions. They're trying to create a new Atlantis or the new age, just as Francis Bacon wrote about in his famous book, The New Atlantis, that is sort of the book that the occultists just love to look at. And if we look forward to the end time, what does the world government look like? Look for an empire being set up that's composed of 10, just as it describes in Revelations and just as it describes in Daniel. But look at it as groups of nations or trading blocks or spheres of influence. This is what that end time world government is going to look like. And each of them are going to send one representative to this council that's going to rule the world, that Antichrist will take over 3.5 years after this comes together. So in the late 60s, you have the Club of Rome.
She wants to talk about Atlantis, man. The dog. What's the dog's name? What's the dog's name, Gary?
His name is Riley, and we just scooted
Riley
him out of the room.
No, get out of here. You kidding me? This is a fucker podcast. You don't have to worry about stuff like that, man. I love animals, dude. You kidding me?
Yeah.
I told you, did horses for 7 years. They don't talk that much, but Mr. Eddie, you're going on. I look at Atlantis,
anyway,
right?
Rome,
yeah, got it. Talk about it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to just finish with the Club of Rome, the Club of Rome, to finish off this. So the Club of Rome is a group that's formed together in the late 60s, and they answer directly to the hierarchy of the Rosicrucians, and there's a hierarchy to all of these secret societies. But their goal and their objective is to set up groups of nations for the world government, and they've already separated the world into 10 groups. So I'm just sort of making a point here. If you want to understand where we're going and what's happening, learn about what happened in prehistory.
Wow, not too long ago too. I mean, how about when the European dollar came together? You were probably writing the book at the time. You're saying to yourself, this may be something interesting to look at. They're throwing the euro together. I don't know how many, was it 10 nations? I don't know, but I guess you count, right? You really follow along with the stuff. This is a book that probably can go on to the end, unfortunately, right?
Yes. Unfortunately, that would be true. So, yeah, I was following the European Union, but I was, even before they really put that thing together, I knew it wasn't going to be the European Union as the world empire. It's the whole world. They're just one of these blocks. And actually, I think the European Union is going to split into two.
It was split into two. I get you. And then the United States is probably the one that United States or China or what other country or Russia, the ones that you look at, one of the three.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's some jostling around, but I think you have two in Europe, one that's dominated by Germany, and then you've got the Western Europe one. I don't think Britain and France, I used to think Britain and France are going to work together, but Britain may actually come together with North America. But either way, you'll have a North American dominated one. You'll have two in Europe. You'll have a Russian dominated one. You know, you're going to have a China dominated one, have another Southeast Asia dominated one. You're going to have an Indian dominated one. So look at sort of the size of the countries and their influence. Those are going to be the dominant ones. You're going to have one that's in South America, maybe include Central America. You're going to have, you know, maybe Turkey dominating one in the Middle East. There might be another offset one there. There's going to be an African one, but it's going to end up of 10 of those sort of trading blocks or spheres of influence that are going to form the end time world government, I think.
No, I'm totally into it. We got Gary Wayne on joining Buck Rotano. I get it. And I know there's one other sign. And this is for somebody who's starting up. I got training wheels on compared to, you know, some guys that interviewed. These guys really put a lot of research in. But is it when the Temple Mount temple is formed again? That would be another sign too, right? Is that one of the signs? And that's
There's three things. There's three things that have to happen to know that we're in the world. I mean, there's a lot of all of them has to come together. But the three big stumbling blocks are world government, world religion, and either rebuilding a new temple where the mosque is, or having the ability to do the sacrifice for the Jewish people on the wing of the mosque, or that mosque isn't really the true location, and they're going to come out and say, you know, it's actually a little bit over here, and they're going to build a temple there. But there has to be a temple, because it's referred to in Daniel and Revelations, where they're going to do the sacrifice. So those are the three big stumbling blocks that have to come together first.
Now, do the giant Nephilim, do they appear today? Are they around today? I mean, maybe not at that stature of height, or is it the people they shrunk down? What would a Nephilim look like today?
Well, I think they look pretty much what we look like today. I mean, there may be some features, but very much diluted. So as they come down through history and as they're trying to intermarry to keep their bloodlines pure, because they want these genealogies that give them the right to rule, and their genealogy back to the Nephilim and to the gods, or as they would call them, or I would call them the fallen angels. They have those genealogies, but they can't just intermarry all the time. Otherwise you get diseases, right? Like, blood diseases, like,
Down syndrome and stuff like that, you know, right?
Down syndrome, hemolytic disease, blood diseases, yeah. Or you have like the Habsburg jaw or something like that. So these families, they still have their genealogies that go back into the mists of time. And so they're around today, but I think they've been diluted with other bloodlines that to prevent disease, that they look more and more like humans and they're the same size. Either that or they have a changeling quality, which is some people speculate on, but there's no real proof of that. So I don't like to get too speculative, but what we can say is that the royal families, let's say like the Windsors in England, they keep their genealogies that go back into the mists of time as to all of the royal families. And if you go back to, you know, World War One, you have like the Romanovs in Russia, and you've got the Habsburgs, and you've got all the royal thrones of Europe. They're cousins, and they're intermarrying, right?
That's
amazing. They continue to intermarry. So it's basically a war of cousins in Europe at that time. And it's all because they're trying to keep those bloodlines as pure as possible. And they take their genealogies back to the major dynasties that would come out of the Middle East. So whether or not it's the Egyptian dynasty or the Babylonian dynasty and the Greek dynasties, is they take their bloodlines right back through there. And there's an interesting thing where Prince Charles says he's related to Vlad the Impaler, right? And has the genealogies to prove that. And that's because the Windsors came from Germany with the Hanovers just before the American Revolution. So they have these genealogies, and this bloodline thing is very, very important. And they believe that they go back to the giants. And what I like to tell a lot of people is it's not what I believe that's important. It's what they believe doing with that belief.
Absolutely. 100%, man. It ain't what you – no one's asking for Gary Wayne's opinion like that. I know what you mean, but, oh, wow. That's crazy. So even as the Egyptians did the same thing, the Greeks did the same thing, everybody, they even to their sister, to the point of their sister. Now, all these major civilizations, ancient civilizations, all created by these people, right? I mean, the technology, at least to teach us, right? Like I heard one guy talk about the Great Pyramid was probably done by a fallen angel. I don't know what I want to say his name is, what they are. But they tried to do it again, the next two pyramids, and they came out nothing like the first pyramid. So they must have like really like did some magic stuff on us. You know what I mean? Like wowed us as humans, as we were hunter gatherers. That's why the ancient alien theory comes in, and it fits perfectly to their what they talk about. Because it's like, you know, these God type people. You know what I mean? But not gods. But we may look at them as gods. It fits perfect. That's why they're on the 11th season already, Gary. You believe that?
Yeah. They do very, very good research, and they come at it from a perspective that they're not, you know, immortal gods. They're just technologically advanced aliens, right? But they're telling the same story, whether or not it's how humankind was civilized or created and who ruled over them and the similar names, like they, you know, they believe in the Anunnaki, and the Anunnaki are just the same as the fallen angels, and the earthly Anunnaki are the same as the Nephilim. So it's the same story. It's just a matter of how high of a being do you take those godlike figures or those rulers up to in that particular mythos. And the technology that they talk about, again, I think, they're bang on that. And when I talked about these seven sacred sciences, this is what's taught to Adam in Eden, according to Freemasonry. And then when Adam leaves Eden, these seven sacred sciences are passed on to Seth on the Seth line, and then the Cainites on the other line, and they're developed in two totally different ways. And so the Cainites are going to develop the seven sciences in a way that isn't going to honor God as the God in the universe and not give him credit for anything and try and lead people away. And they develop the mystical sun-worshipping religions to house this belief system in, and then the secret societies to develop these seven sacred sciences, and they come down through, as you would know them through history and secret societies, as more or less the mystery schools and branches thereof. And they actually give credit within the craft, within Freemasonry and in Rosicrucianism, to Enoch, son of Cain, for developing the knowledge to build the pyramids. And so you can imagine how far this technology
now, Gary,
developed.
Here's a silly question. Which Enoch are you talking about? Because I know there was more than one Enoch. It's not the Enoch that was taken up into heaven, was it? That Enoch? Because I always get confused with that. It's not him.
Two Enochs. Yeah. Let me explain that. But first,
I'm sorry,
let me finish off with – that's okay. No, you weren't. I just wanted to say you also have the next level of information that comes to catalyze this and make it happen faster is the illicit knowledge from heaven. So either from aliens, from gods, or from the fallen angels, they add to this knowledge to help develop the sciences. So in the Bible, as I said, there's two lines. There's the Cain line and there's the Seth line. So Enoch, son of Cain, is the first Enoch that comes along. He develops the mystical religions, the seven sacred sciences, and the secret societies, and is the greatest patriarch in the craft, particularly Freemasonry and the Rosicrucians. Then you have Enoch that comes along in the sixth generation, who is the son of Jared. So he's actually seventh generation. He's the holy one who gets taken to heaven and walked with God. Two different Enochs had two significant impacts on prehistory, but they do two different things, and they both wrote scriptures. So when you have various books of Enoch out there, you need to sort of discern if you're a Christian as to who's writing what.
No, that's not – that's the thing that popped out to me right away to stop you and say which one. Because I don't know. I don't know, Gary. And honestly, a lot of this research you do, it's pretty tough, man. I mean, especially the names and to follow along with the story. So I take a basic story out of it, and I try to just picture it being like a storyboard when you're talking. It pops up for me. Now, out of all the giants, that fallen angels, any of them were good to the humans? I mean, they don't all have an agenda. Are any good guys in the fallen angels?
Well, you know, if you take how polytheism looks at these gods and fallen angels, you have good ones and you have bad ones, right?
Okay.
And in the beginning, when they developed the giants, the giants are judicious rulers as well in polytheism. And then the human part corrupts them over time and they turn against humankind. So there's that sort of dualism that's going on all of the time. So, and if you look into the Book of Jubilees, which I also think is written by Enoch, son of Cain, because the Essenes believe that and they're polytheists, you have these watchers being portrayed as righteous individuals, but these are the same ones that also says in Jubilees that they're going to, you know, violate the laws of creation and create these giants. So it's a bit contradictory that way. But that's the most important book for the Essenes is the Jubilees, and Enoch is their greatest patriarch, and Enoch, son of Cain. So, there's some good ones out there, but just as there's good angels and bad angels, right?
Good people,
and,
yeah. It's same thing with the people.
Yeah.
You're right. 100%, man. And,
yeah.
And it's right. You're right. Because anytime you see a good anything, there's always going to be the opposite to shake stuff up, man. Like, it's like I work a regular job. You go to work and you have one guy at your job that's so much the negative vibe. And you try to have a good day, you try to suck your vibe. So I guess it's between each race and the same exact thing, man. I'm sure of that. I look at – now I'm going to switch your – I look at, like, say, the Atlanteans and the Atlantis, people from Atlanta. You know, let's find Atlantis. Let's do this. And then almost like put them on a pedestal when you watch it on, you know, any kind of videos or TV specials. It's almost like let's find it, man. And if they really know what they were looking for, I don't think they would want to find it, right?
Well, they want to find it, I think, or civilization like that, but they want to find it on their timetable and when they're ready to reveal it.
That's it, right? How much they do know out there that none is going to be revealed, I guess, right? Even like somebody the Smithsonian that's taking skeletons, like they want nobody to know about any of these giant people. It's like it's erased. They had to use us because we're the only ones, I guess, they can mate with. And then I can't get out of my head a giant having a woman, a regular woman having a baby, a giant baby, and that's it. They said she would die from it. That would be – I can imagine, Mike. And then you have some stories of giants that would be man-eaters. You know what I mean? They would actually eat humans.
Yeah.
It's crazy stuff, man.
Well, when they turned on humankind, they were eating humans and drinking the blood. So that's how awful they got. And that's why blood drinking is part of the secret society rituals. The original mothers of the Nephilim, they all died. They couldn't – I mean, they weren't – giants weren't born supersized. They were born as babies, but very, very large babies, and they couldn't bear them. So what they did, according to the first book of Enoch, which, it has a couple, if some corruptions in it, but it runs very, very scriptural in terms of most of the book. They did a barbaric form of cesarean and slit the bellies open to save the babies, and all the women died, and they became and the women, because they were part of the violations against creation, became a sort of a form of demon that legends would have them taking part in leading humans astray as mermaids, and they're called sirens as well out of Greek mythology. So that's kind of where the Greek mythology sort of links back. So the babies being born killed the mother.
No doubt about it.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
And
I don't even know how they would have like sexual intercourse with each other. I don't even. How tall was a giant? And I'm not gonna get that's. I'm not. It's PG. How tall was a giant that you think? 12 feet? 10 feet? What are you thinking?
I you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest that, you know, the original giants were somewhere between 20 and 40 feet tall. Out of the Bible, we only can get, let's say, King Og to, you know, maximum, say, 14 or 15 feet if you're using a royal cubit as opposed to a common cubit. If you use a royal cubit with Goliath, he goes from close to 9 feet tall to about 11 feet, 3 inches. And the royal cubit is 21 inches as opposed to the common, which is 18. So, but getting back to your point is, yes, there would have been difficulties with giants mating with humans to reproduce, but there are also female giants as well. They were called in Greek mythology, you know, Titanides, right? And that's why you have Titania that shows up in Shakespeare. Again, you know, sort of keeping that ideology alive of the giants in Midsummer's Night Dream and all the fairies and things that are also closely related. So, but the fallen angels, they found a way to procreate. So either, you know, in the beginning, they poured the semen in, both angels and then the offspring of the giants, as it's depicted in a lot of Egyptian reliefs, or somehow they were able to have sex. But right. certainly the fallen angels had a changeling sort of quality. So they could have made their body sort of, you know, make that fit. Giants being born, unless they had a changeling quality, which I don't think they did, although a lot of people think that that's how they moved from reptilian back to how they look like us. But again, that's all speculation.
Yeah, like shapeshifters, shapeshifting and stuff like that, man. There's a lot of stuff out there. And Gary, I heard you on another show. You were talking about Sasquatch. And I was like, wow. I mean, you were actually talking about, and I didn't think that that'd be kind of tied into the Book of Genesis in a way. Can that tie in together, the Sasquatch? I know.
We don't have Sasquatch that's talked about in the Bible that we can take it back to. If you go back to what I was talking about this greater Nephilim concept of corrupting the whole world and
animals and all
prehistory.
Yeah.
And if you look at the centaurs, or if you have, Pegasus or all of these fabulous beings coming out of prehistory, and you accept that perhaps then maybe that wasn't just imagination, that they had the technology and the ability to do this, then you have Sasquatch that shows up, again, in all continents around the world, just known by different names, Sasquatch, Bigfoot, Yeti, all continents, and they're hairy, larger animals. They're not as big as Nephilim, but they're hairy like Nephilim. They tend to live in caves, as what a lot of the Nephilim did that were chased out. They were forced to live in caves, and of course the Horites, which is one of the Nephilim in the Bible after the floods, are actually known as, you know, if you take that back to Hebrew, as cave dwellers. And caves are also sort of this constant that there's portals and things that happen through caves, and that's how a lot of people think that the Sasquatch stays hidden, is that they're actually moving between dimensions. And you connect fairies in, which are again all part of prehistory, and that's why fairy entertainment is always kept alive, and they came through portals as well. You start to get a connection in here that there's a possibility. So yeah, I've done a few Sasquatch shows just to sort of talk about what are the things that kind of connect Sasquatch to that greater Nephilim concept. But from a biblical perspective, we don't have anything to base that on.
No, I got you. It's like doing a different sport. You cover baseball, you're going to switch it up to football. I got you. It's a sport.
Yep.
I got you 100%. I always thought that, the Sasquatch, or I go back to like Rudolph the Red-Nosed. Remember reindeer? He was good for putting the star on top of the tree, the abominable snowman. Remember they found him because he had a toothache? But I could see that in a way, because looking at like different, like, you know, the giants or changing people or animals, like you said, the Pegasus and all this other stuff, we're not, I'm going to take a little ancient alien theory right here, but we're not too far-fetched of doing that today with sheeps and,
exactly.
And so I can see, you know, why couldn't they have done it back then? And they were so far advanced. I mean, we would just go out and would be hunter gatherers, and then they came with all this information. So honestly, anything's possible, man. But they make it.
You look at how far we've developed in the last 150 years, And if they had the assistance of developing knowledge, how fast could they have developed in 1,000 years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you're absolutely right, because only a couple of 150 years ago, I don't know how long, these two Wright brothers were flying a couple hundred yards. I mean, now you could just get on a jet and I can just, wherever you are, I'll meet you tomorrow, man. You know what I mean? So I got you. It is absolutely insane. And now the technology part, is that them? Do you think it has to do with them setting us up for the end game?
I think so. I think if we're going to participate in that rebellion that they want to pitch to us, then they have to get us up to speed. So they have to develop things to be able to, sell it to us that we have a chance to win. I think it's going to be this huge deception from my perspective, but, everything's sort of leaning to this great day when we're going to meet all of these aliens, right? And they're going to tell us what really happened. And they're going to change everybody's perspective instantly, right? And that's in prophecy, we're told that there is going to be a deception and a delusion that is so strong that it is going to deceive the elect, if that were possible.
You're right. Because you look at anybody today and you told them, like, if there was any kind of civilization out there, right, that actually landed on this planet, I don't know, take a movie or whatever, the panic that would be out there, it would be crazy. Because I don't think now I look at people today, and I tell it to people I'm talking to you about, not you, because you're more of a Bible, you're looking at Genesis. That's not, I'm not saying you personally, but other guys I had on the show, last week I had Nick Redfern on. He's really into cryptozoology and the oddest stuff, aliens, UFOs, and some of the stuff, there's so much stuff that these people are seeing. And I mean, some really credible people. I mean, there's got to be something out there, but other people could look at it like, you're crazy. We're going to lock you up and throw away the key. Yep. And there's so much out there to believe. So much information is overwhelming, especially for somebody who's has a background in it, not educated like you are. And, you actually studied 30 years, 40 years, whatever it is. For me, it's easy for me to find something on YouTube or the internet and really go the wrong way, man, with the wrong information. Like, these just two guys, and I don't want to say their names, is saying that he talks to blue birds. Now, do I believe him? Can it be possible? I guess it could be possible. I mean, how much planets are out there in infinite universe? People play you, but if I want to see that, if I want to see him talk about it, I got to pay $29.99. Why is that? Why? Big disclosure, right? The big disclosure, but I got to pay. Or I got to go out to a desert to pay $450 to watch a lecture. I mean, that's crazy. That's not disclosure. That's robbery, to be honest with you. You know what I mean? So I like your angle at it, Gary Wayne. If you guys want to pick up his book, you can find it on Amazon. You also can go to the Genesis6Conspiracy.com. You can contact Gary easily on Facebook or any other Twitter I'm sure you're on also. Easy to get in contact with and to teach me. Oh, man, I just sit here and I don't even want to talk because I don't want to say the wrong thing. The kid from Queens with the accent. What does Gary – we'll get back to the book in a second. What does Gary do when he's not writing or researching? You like movies and into stuff like that? What would a good movie for Gary be? We'll switch it up a little bit. We'll loosen up, to unbutton the top, button in a shirt and take the tie off. What's Gary? What do you like to watch, man? I like The Big Bang Theory when I really want to laugh and be stupid. That's a funny show. What do you like to do in your spare time, man?
Well, I do like movies, and I do like science fiction movies. I just find the allegories and the stuff in it fascinating to watch. So I do like movies. I like to golf as well. I like to be at the lake in the summer, and I love watching sports. I used to play a fair bit of sports, as I mentioned. But so fairly wide-ranging sort of what I like to do. And even though, when you're doing research, you have to get very, very specific. I can't just do that all the time, right? So I have to have other things that are going to entertain me.
Are you a Canucks fan? I got to talk a little BS with each other. You're a Canucks fan?
Yes.
You know, I'm a Ranger fan,
to be,
right?
But they make it
I'm
difficult.
A Ranger fan.
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
a Ranger fan.
Yeah,
so they're... I remember back in 94, this team – nah, we're just joking around, man. What a Stanley Cup final that was, man. It went down,
yeah.
man.
Yeah.
It went down to the last
yeah,
–
Messier, Bure. Yeah.
Yeah, Bure with the penalty shot too at Richter, right? What a
yeah.
save. And then
yeah.
Bure came to New
yeah.
York. And he was a good player, but when he was when he first came up with the Canucks, man, what a talented player, man! He must have been, had a little fallen
yeah,
angel in him.
He had great speed. I mean, just do everything at full speed. And the only player that's come along is one recently that I would say can do everything at full speed, which is somebody to keep watching is McDavid, because he's at full speed all the time.
McDavid, you like that player? They play both yeah. ways. But they play both
yep.
ways, right? That's a player that I like too,
yep.
man. My Rangers right now. Well, I haven't really watched that. I've been a big Mets fan. I'm a huge Mets fan.
Yep.
And finally, we
yep.
got a pitcher there. But here's the thing: we got a little what do you call it? Demigod on our team too, and his name is Noah Syndergaard. He they call him Thor.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you ever heard of him.
Yep.
The guy's a monster.
Yep.
I don't know if you're Vancouver baseball yep. fans or not, but what a monster, man! That's another Nephilim, man. I think he may be. I don't know if he's maybe one of the good guys, you know. But with the book, back
yeah.
to the book, man. I can go on with this stuff, man. Have you ever been to a racetrack? I ask a lot of guests
yep.
that. Yep. What Northlands?
Yep.
Northlands is by you, right?
Yep, Northlands is out here. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah,
I was just down in. I was down in Miami a month ago, and I went to the racetrack there. So just
Gulfstream. Wow, Gary
yeah,
going to
yeah,
Gulfstream
so,
Park. Oh, great
yeah,
place.
Had a friend said we got to go there. So I was down there for a few weeks. So
it's great weather, right? Great weather. Now, if you go with your wife
yep,
or your
yep.
girlfriend or your kids, they got the shop in there, and it's top notch.
Yep.
Horse racing, like the top of the world horse racing this time of year. So that's
yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
I can talk about that
it's
too,
a spectacular
man.
Spectacular facility, no doubt about
and
it.
And the Grizzlies are gone. The Grizzlies are gone, so we don't follow
yep.
basketball no more. So
yeah.
you're beautiful. Where you live is actually a beautiful part. Beautiful, you know, part of not my country, but the one up north in Canada. But thank you so much for joining
yeah.
me tonight. But the book, very. You get tons of requests, man. How many shows are you doing, man? How many shows are you doing a week? What's going on, man? How's the book selling? How are you getting feedback with it? Good feedback or?
Yeah, I'm getting good feedback on it. I mean, there's people do ratings on it on Amazon. Amazon.com has a lot. There's like, I think there's 130 reviews or so. And, you know, 4.6 out of 5 for stars. So pretty happy about that. And Goodreads has about... you know, not as many ratings on it, but a very similar rating. So for the size of the book and the topic, it's getting the very good feedback. The sales are starting to go. And I stay busy, obviously, promoting the information more than the book, because I really want to get the information out. And if people like what I say, then maybe they'll buy the book. But so I do at least 3 shows a week, sometimes 4 or 5, and just get out there and get the information out.
Busy dude, man. Even to join Buck Rotano, and as I'm starting off with this new like crusade, here for example, I had last week. I said I had Nick on. I had another guy on, Ken Gearhard, right? He's into the cryptos. Mothman is a big story, right? The Mothman prophecies,
yep.
fusion to that. Next week, I'm gonna
yep.
have a guy, Wesley Walker. Now picture that, New York Jets wide receiver, went to Cal University. So I like everything, man. You know what I mean? I like it all. But I can't step too far away from this stuff, man. It's really it's amazing stuff, man. All the stories, you can go on for days. And the book, I think you said almost how many pages is your book?
It's 800 pages, and
wow.
So about 120 pages of endnotes, and there's 98 chapters. Technically 100 when you have the epilogue and the preface on it, but it's written in a way that, even though it's a large book, you don't have to read it all at once. So every chapter is a mini story that leads into the next chapter, and then we'll keep coming up as the book unfolds again. So you can read a chapter or two, put it down, come back. If you get further into the book and you want to go back and refresh your memory, it's a little bit easier to find that chapter and refresh your memory on it. So each chapter is 6 or 7 pages. So, but you can't speed read the book because – you're going to start to blow some brain cells if you try and cram that much information in. So you have to read it as you can digest it, because it is just loaded with information through to the last chapter.
And I put a lot of time into that. Gary Wayne on the Buck Ritano podcast. And I'll cut it short. It's an hour. I give a nice little hour. We got a nice feed on it. You can get it at Amazon, right? The Genesis 6 Conspiracy. You can get it there. I'm sure just Google it and you can find it. And how much is the book? 24? I think I said 24 places, $25. You're getting an 800, 900 page book. Come on. With information packed. So, come on. You can't beat that.
And Kindle. And then you got the Kindle version as well if you want a digital one. So
I was going to talk you into the audio book, but I mean, that'd probably be like, well, how many hours? 40 hours?
It's difficult to get people to do the audio version because they look at how many hours they're going to have to put in it and what's the return, and it's like, yeah, maybe not.
Gary, I'll talk to you in the next book you come out with. Is there a next book in the works after this one? Do you have anything coming out?
I do have one that I'm working on. It's a ways away, and we'll see how that comes along. It's going to go into a different direction. I get a lot of people who would like me to do a little bit more in this area, but you know, I don't think sequels are always the best way to go, because you've basically told most of what you want to do the first go around. So I'd rather maybe get into some other areas that people hadn't thought of in quite the same way as I look at things. So that's the next project, and it's more or less on the Lost Tribes of Israel.
Wow, that's awesome, man. It'll lead you into Ethiopia, as I think, right? As I think they claim they have the Ark of the Covenant, right? So they get sick around it, I hear.
They do believe that, yeah.
Wow, and it could have. I mean, I'm gonna let you go, but I don't want to have you go on and on. But could it be there? Yes or no?
It's possible, but you know, if you get into the book of Ezra, it seems to me that it says in there, and that's part of the Bible. It used to be in the King James Version, that isn't anymore, and it isn't in most versions. It's still in the Catholic Bible, but it talks about Jeremiah actually hiding the ark hidden in a mountain somewhere. So it's possible that they have it, but nobody really knows. I know Graham Hancock was down there and a number of years ago and was trying to get a look at it, and I'm not sure he actually was able to verify it. But
what's your take on Graham? I mean, I love his stuff. I read about three or four of his books already. Oh, I think it's amazing. And I like the angle of his research on the meteor, you know, hitting up north, where's it, Antarctica, and then melting down. And that could have been set us back again. I wonder how many times we were set back, you know, over the years. I mean, like, it's right to say, but he only knows, right? I guess that he's only upstairs. Yep. He's the only one who knows. But I appreciate it, man. I'd love to have you on again down the line, especially when you come out with new information on the Lost Tribes. That's awesome stuff, man. I'm looking forward to, you know, touching base with you down the line, man. And I appreciate you taking the time and giving me some knowledge, man. It's always good. Knowledge is the key, man. I love it. One more thing before I let you go. These guys, right, these hip-hop rappers and all these other things, you think they're touched by the Illuminati, or this is all BS play?
You know, I think they're in the beginning they weren't helped by it, but when you get a little bit more popular, then you start to get the influence of how they want that entertainment to go with the message that they're doing it, and that's where the money comes from to support it. So, and whether or not it's specifically Illuminati or not, understand that all of the secret societies have specific agendas and roles. So, generally speaking, Illuminati's not involved on the entertainment, even though like a lot of people do, and there's Illuminati symbology, but that's more, you know, usually from the Rosicrucians that are directing sort of the entertainment aspect.
But their
symbology is the same. So.
And flicking signs, you know, like that's why I find it hard that they are related to it. But I just had to ask you that, man. And I kind of thought you'd come up with that answer, to be honest with you. But Gary Wayne, get his book, listen to him on YouTube. Just go on YouTube, guys out there, and just search Gary Wayne, and knowledge just pops up, man, all over the place. And I enjoy listening to you, and I will continue to listen to you on every podcast that you're on, man. So, you know, God bless you, and, you know, thank you so much for coming on the Buck Ritano podcast, man, taking your time to share with me, man. I'm honored. Thank you so much, Gary.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, I won't keep you that long like that, man. But wherever you're in New York, you give me a little message, man. I'll take you out to the Belmont racetrack over for a good day, man.
Excellent.
All right. Thank you so much, brother. That's Gary Wayne, the Genesis 6 Conspiracy. Good night, everybody. Okay, here's the deal. I'll let Gary go. I'll let everybody know I can be reached easily for a guest if you want to call in. Anytime after my guest comes on, if I have some call-ins, I can take questions on that. I don't like to put the guest in a circumstance of taking questions, because that's not. But after, you're more than welcome to join in. Reach me at BuckRitanoPodcast@gmail.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Or search Buck Ritano when it pops up. I'm actually now putting the videos, not the videos, the audio onto YouTube. You know, a couple here and there. So thanks again to Gary Wayne. Great book. Check it out. Next week, we're going to be coming back with some hot fire. We're just going to switch it up a little bit. I think maybe football. I also have I'm talking too fast myself. I can't even think. But I have Heather Arnold, who was on one of the first couple of shows up on YouTube last night. So check it out. She's got a book coming out in December. She'll be back on the show. Any request of guests, or you like to be a guest on the Buck Ritano podcast, shoot me an email. Love to talk to you. It's Buck Ritano. We talked the Genesis 6 conspiracy tonight, and I had a great time. Thanks, everybody. Tune in next week. Same time, like the Bat Channel, Bat Time, Buck Channel. Next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Jump aboard. But you can listen to any show you want, man. Go to YouTube. You click on my to be on YouTube. You can go to Facebook. I'm on Facebook, Buck Ritano, Instagram, anywhere you can find a link. You can listen to the show anytime, not just tonight. You can listen to it anytime. So, Buck Ritano, have a good night, everybody, and speak to you next week. Good night, guys.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to the Buck Ritano podcast, and you'll tune in again next time. If you have a question, comment, suggestion, or an idea for a future topic, send us an email. We will get to it. Thanks again for listening to the Buck Ritano podcast. We'll see you next time.